Welcome to MidEcon, a podcast that highlights work done by students and faculty in the Economics Department at Middlebury College. I'm Eric Gong, a professor in the department, and I'll be your host for this episode. My guest for this episode is Jack McGuire. Jack has diverse interests from sports to politics to empirical research methods. He is someone you might meet on an airplane and end up talking for hours. Jack's thesis looks at seemingly random events like hurricanes and storms, and he sees if they have an impact on elections. What is fascinating about this work is that it really tests whether voters correctly attribute events to their political leaders. And in many ways, this has huge implications for the functioning of democracy. As Jack's thesis advisor, we met numerous times, and I have found that Jack always seems like he has something interesting to say. During the course of our conversation, he had a lot of interesting things to say, and I hope you enjoy our discussion. Jack McGuire, welcome to the show. I'm so happy to have you.
Yes, it's great to be here. Thank you for having me.
We're going to talk more about your thesis, but before that, I'd love just to hear a bit about your backstory, I guess like your origin story of how you ended up at Middlebury. So yeah, how did you end up at Middlebury?
Yeah, so when I was in the college application process, I was looking mostly at small liberal arts colleges in the Northeast, like Middlebury. And when I toured the campus, I thought it was a beautiful campus. I fell in love with it. And I felt like the people here seemed really down to earth. And I knew it was the place that I wanted to be for my 4 years of school.
So you're saying the college tour made a difference?
I would say that I think it made a difference. I will add that my dad also is an alumni. So I maybe had a bit of a skewed perspective, but I think that, you know, I just being on campus, it really made a meaningful difference and made me know that it's where I want to be.
My wife and I are having a debate right now about college tours. And so the context is I have a daughter who is entering senior year and she is thinking about applying to college.
Right.
And my wife is a big advocate to go on as many college tours as possible because she actually did a college tour at Williams when she was, I don't know, like a junior. And she was like, oh yeah, I'm going to Williams. I had a very different experience. I didn't do any tours. Pretty much my parents said like, apply first and we'll see where you get in. So it's always, I think, enlightening for me to hear how a college tour made a difference.
Yeah, I think maybe a good one, maybe you might not notice and might not factor into your decision, but a bad one, I think, can easily take a college off the list is probably what I would say.
Do you mind if I ask, have you ever had a bad college tour and what was it like?
I think, well, speaking of Williams, I think my tour at Williams was not that great. I think the tour guide just, I guess maybe was not the best presenter, which made, and also I think Williams' location is just not, clearly not as great as Middlebury's.
Oh, all right. Props to Middlebury. So Jack, remind me, are you a double major or just a straight econ major?
I'm an econ major and then I have minors in political science and film and media culture.
Oh, wow. All right. So you have really diverse interests.
I guess so. Yeah.
How did you end up as an econ and not say a political science or film and media studies major?
Yeah. So it took me a long time to really ultimately decide on my major, maybe a little bit later compared to most people. But I just think that I've always really been interested in, social science and also math. And I felt like econ was a good combination of allowing me to, you know, work on quantitative, more mathematical skills, while also, you know, looking at more social science-y researching government and also kind of combining that interest in, you know, politics and how society works.
Yeah. You mentioned you're kind of a late bloomer to econ. What, if you can like think back upon your first year here, what did you think that econ was all about. And has that changed since, you know, you're now almost graduating?
Yeah. So I think in my first year, I kind of thought that econ had this sort of finance business type track. And I've learned throughout my 4 years taking econ classes that econ really isn't only about, you know, how the stock market works and how people, you know, make money and manage their money. It's really, I think, about asking questions about society and trying to find informed answers to those questions.
Yeah, you know, a funny story, when I tell people that, you know, I did my PhD in economics, typically one of the questions they will ask me is like, oh, well, where's the stock market going?
Yeah.
And I'll be like, oh, I don't know. And yeah, I think you've had a really good insight there that economics maybe can better be labeled as quantitative social science. Like,
yeah,
any question in the realm of social science is something that could possibly be answered in economics. In economics, what it does is it just gives you the tools to answer those questions.
Right, exactly, yeah.
Did you have any challenges as an econ major? Again, do you mind if I ask, when did you declare a major? You declared a little bit late?
I think I declared at the end of my sophomore year, if I'm remembering correctly.
Oh, that's not too bad.
Oh, okay.
That's about
I feel
right
like
time.
A lot of econ people, though, like at their first semester of freshman year, they know that that's what they're going to do. At least that's what it felt like a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. Any challenges with the major?
Yeah, I think that...
besides getting into classes, I know that's a big challenge.
Yeah, I think that the one thing is that, I guess in my untraditional maybe econ path, I might have done some classes out of the traditional order. I think I took econ stats and regression analysis my sophomore year and didn't take micro and macro theory until my junior and senior years, which might be a little unorthodox and untraditional, but I think that the department is really flexible in letting people choose their own path and doing, you know, what they're interested in and what works best for them.
Yeah. If there's someone listening right now who's like, say, a first or second year student, and they're thinking about an econ major, any advice for them? Like, what types of students would really thrive in the major?
Yeah, I think going back to just, I think the general, what econ is all about is asking questions. So I think if you're a naturally curious person, I think that is who would make a great econ major.
Yeah, so just someone who's like just really curious about the way the world
how
works.
How the world works, yeah.
Okay. Well, your curiosity led you to local elections, and the title of your thesis is "Who'll Stop the Rain? The Effect of Natural Disasters on Local Elections." This is a really like intriguing title. Can you just unpack that? Like, what is your thesis all about?
Yeah, well, I guess first on the title, I'm a big classic rock fan, so I wanted to get a Creedence Clearwater Revival reference in there. But just speaking in my thesis in general, my thesis is generally addressing how do a natural disaster happening across the U.S., how does it affect incumbent vote share in local elections? So it might seem like that there's not really a lot of interaction between those two things, but I've actually stumbled upon there's a lot of literature that exists about how seemingly random events that don't really have to do with politics, how they could trickle in and lead to changing voters' decision-making. And, you know, with climate change leading to more natural disasters happening, I wanted to see if natural disasters could be one of these random events that could potentially alter people's decision-making and change how elections turn out.
Can you share with listeners the story about shark attacks in elections?
Yeah. So one interesting study that I encountered was in 1916, incumbent President Woodrow Wilson performed worse in counties in New Jersey that had higher instances of shark attacks compared to counties that had no shark attacks at all. And kind of the thesis is just that a bad thing happened in these counties and the citizens kind of irrationally blamed Woodrow Wilson, even though he clearly is not the reason why these shark attacks are happening.
Right. And so it sounds like that, in some sense, that's what your thesis is testing. Are voters somewhat irrational? So if there's like a hurricane or a fire that strikes my area, do I punish the incumbent? Do I say, oh, you must be responsible? Is that the gist?
Yeah, that's basically what I'm testing. It's kind of stress testing democracy, checking the health of democracy, because what I've learned in my political science classes is that democracy functions when people are able to attribute blame and praise correctly. And when they don't do that, bad leaders stay in power while good leaders are voted out of office, which leads to ultimately bad policy and bad outcomes in the long run.
Oh, wow. So I that is really kind of a compelling pitch for your thesis. It's not just about studying random events and if it affects elections. It really drills down to the core foundations of democracy, that voters need to be informed and they need to be able to attribute correctly what their leaders are responsible for.
Exactly.
Oh, that's fascinating. Okay. So, you know, I'm always curious, how did you arrive at this question? You could have asked so many different questions. Why this question?
Yeah. So when I started writing my thesis over J-term, I did not have a specific question in mind. I'm generally interested in sports and politics. So as you can remember, I was thinking of exploring those topics. And I encountered one study that found that incumbents in places where the local college football team lost ended up performing worse in their elections compared to if the local college football team had won. And I thought this was really interesting, and it kind of like led me to this deeper literature where I found out about shark attacks. I found out about other types of natural disasters affecting elections. And this was also the same time that there were wildfires in Los Angeles, and Governor Gavin Newsom in California was receiving lots of blame for his constituents for something that wasn't necessarily his fault, a wildfire happening. So this kind of led me to, you know, further, I guess, expand on this existing literature and look at local elections specifically to see how a seemingly random event that doesn't have to do with politics could affect changes in vote share.
Yeah. So it sounds like you came up with your question through just a lot of reading, discussion, being aware of the news, and all of a sudden a light bulb popped open and you're like, hey, that's the question.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. So take us through, you've got the question. This happened sometime during J term. It sounds like the next big step is collecting the data, putting the data together. Can you share with us your experience with that?
Yeah. So in initially collecting the data, I got a little bit lucky in that I had found two pretty expansive free data sets that provided me with most of my answers, or most of the data I would need. So the first is the local elections database, which a team of researchers has tracked every local election since 1989, tracking which candidates are running, how much of the vote share they got, and where they're running, their race, their gender, all sorts of different factors about these specific candidates. And then I also found the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration tracks every single storm event that occurs in the U.S. since 1996 and has property damage figures for how much damage each event occurs. So I was able to find these two databases that track kind of the two main variables that I wanted to find. I think the challenging part was finding a way to put these two pieces of data together and try and clean and merge the data to make sure that I could find a way to identify unique disasters affecting specific elections in specific years.
Is it fair to say that was the most challenging part of the thesis, just putting the data together?
I would say that that was a big challenge. I'd say there were a lot of challenges that I faced, but I think that another challenging aspect is that I think that there's a few different channels in which natural disasters could potentially affect elections, whether that's voters irrationally blaming a candidate or rallying around the candidate and positively voting for the candidate after a disaster, or voting based on how the candidate responds to the disaster. So I think kind of disentangling those multiple factors might have been my biggest challenge.
Okay. And so to my understanding, what you're doing is you've got all of these candidates that are running in local elections. We can think about county executives and mayors. And you've got some of them where there's a disaster that hits right before the election. And you've got other candidates where there is no disaster. That's like the control group or the comparison group?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Okay. And so what is the main result?
Yeah. So the main result is that I find no clear effect for no causal link between a disaster occurring and that leading to a significant difference in vote share between these treated counties, which is where a disaster occurs, 6 months before a local election in these control counties where a disaster doesn't occur. I do find that there's somewhat suggestive evidence that if a politician has a good response to a disaster and gets FEMA involved and provides FEMA assistance and gets newspapers to give him more positive, favorable coverage, this is suggestive that that candidate might receive more vote share. But there's definitely not enough evidence to suggest a causal interpretation between these two things happening.
Is it fair to say that your results would suggest that democracy, at least in these local elections, is in good shape? That voters are not, you know, blaming local leaders for things that are outside of their control?
I think that it is indicative of that local elections are pretty healthy right now in terms of a bad thing is happening and voters are not immediately reacting to that when and they're realizing that it's not the politician's fault. They shouldn't praise or blame the politician for this occurring. I think that the response the voters' response to politicians responding is also indicative of a healthy response for democracy, because that is the politician actually going and doing good work, and they're rewarding the politician for that good work.
Oh. Well, that's hopeful to hear, at least on a local level.
I will say that it's definitely would be interesting to explore how this would be different for state and federal elections to see maybe in, I guess, what voters might attribute as more higher stakes elections if they are more willing to, you know, blame or praise politicians.
Yeah. So you are almost completed with this process. You've invested a lot of time, energy, resources. What surprised you the most of working on the thesis?
I think that the most surprising part was when I started the process, I was worried that it would kind of just be like being thrown in the deep end and kind of doing all this independent research on my own. But I really think that I've been surprised about the amount of support that I've received along the way. My thesis group, my research group, who I've met with every week, Ian and Emily, they've been a great support, and it's been great to, you know, talk with them. Having these certain milestones every couple of weeks has really been helpful to making sure that I'm on track and been making good progress. And it's been nice to know that there's kind of a safety net for the thesis that I didn't really realize was going to be there when I started, which has made the process, less scary, I would say.
Did you have like expectations that we would just send you to like a closet and say like, just work on your own and come back in 4 months with a thesis?
I've heard other departments doing something a little bit similar to that.
Maybe I'll try that next semester. No, yeah. Just kidding. For our, say, students, maybe in their second or third year who are listening, what advice would you give them if they're considering doing a thesis?
Yeah, I think that doing independent research can at times be a little frustrating and demoralizing when things are not always going your way. But I think that it's really important when you're doing this process to, you know, be patient and persistent, and to know that, you know, if you keep chipping away little by little, you're eventually gonna, you know, get to the top of the mountain and have this very, I guess, big cumulative work that you've worked on for many months to be proud of.
Yeah. Someone told me, which I think is a good way of thinking about it, your first like 3 years at Middlebury, you are a consumer of research, or you're a consumer of information. But when you're doing a thesis, you're actually now a producer, which is kind of a nice transition.
Yeah.
All right. So we'd like to ask all of our guests these last four questions. And so the first one is, what is your favorite thing about Middlebury?
Yeah, I hate to give a generic answer, but I would say the people are really what makes Middlebury great. I think that during my 4 years, I really found a core group of friends who I really, really enjoy spending time with. And I think that, you know, the small community here allows you to really make intimate connections with, you know, really great people.
I'm curious. So my wife went to Williams, small liberal art college.
Right.
I went to UC Berkeley. I know there are like 30,000 students. And one of the big differences is that my wife made lifelong friends. They're friends that she still talks to. We like go on vacations together. The friends I met at Berkeley, they were like friendly when I was an undergrad, but I don't really have any contact with them now,
right,
like over 30 years later. I'm just curious, how like at Middlebury, at a small liberal arts college, how do you make these connections? Is it just like, hey, my first year, I just connected with them? Is it through classes, clubs, activities? I know if you're an athlete, you kind of have a natural community of people.
Yeah. At least, I guess, speaking from personal experience, my friend group, I mean, none of us live together. We all are different majors. We just kind of were brought together, I guess, freshman year. And I think being in such a small community in Vermont, you know, might seem isolating, but I think that that really brings people together and allows them to, you know, forge maybe deeper connections compared to if you're in, you know, a more urban place with, you know, more people and more things to do.
Yeah. More options to be off campus.
Yes,
yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. All right. What would you tell your 16-year-old self?
I think that I would tell them that I guess they probably have a lot to look forward to. I think it's kind of...
Including thesis.
Yeah. It's kind of crazy how much you can accomplish in 6 years and how much you can change as a person. I feel like I would also tell them to kind of try and slow down and, you know, try and take moments and embrace the moment, because I feel like 6 years can also go by very quick, especially, I guess, in your late teens and early 20s.
Yeah. Are you able to reflect a little bit on the fly on how you have changed since being 16?
A little bit. I think, I don't know. I feel like I'm still mostly the same person, I hope.
I'm 50, and there are certain aspects of my 16-year-old self that I think are still with me.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm not sure. I think I'm definitely more assertive, I think.
Oh, that's good.
Yes.
That's good.
Yeah.
Okay. Was it just through being in, having experiences where you had to be assertive?
I think so. Yes. Right. Yeah.
Oh, so I think that's a good quality. Where do you hope to be in 10 years?
Yeah, I hope to hopefully have a career where I'm doing something where I can hopefully do meaningful work that's also fulfilling to me personally. And I'm exploring, you know, a few different paths right now. I'm not really sure where I'm going to end up. I'm considering potentially getting a doctorate in economics. I'm considering law school. Maybe I'll do neither of those things. I'm really just...
Or maybe I'll do both.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. I'll see where the world takes me. But mm-hmm. I feel like that if I'm doing something where I enjoy the work I'm doing and I feel like I'm making a difference in the world, I think I would enjoy that.
Great. All right. The final question, which some people find really easy and some people find difficult. What is the meaning or purpose of life?
Yeah, I think that's a little bit of a difficult question personally. I think what I come up with is, I think working towards, you know, collective good and like collective betterment of society. I think that if you personally are kind and you work hard and are productive towards, you know, helping others, I think that, you know, the world will pay that back to you and lead to, you know, collective good for you and those around you.
I think that's a wonderful place to end. Jack, thanks so much for your time. I love being able to chat with you about your Middlebury experiences and your senior thesis. Keep up the good work. And thanks again.
Yes, thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to Mid Econ. Please consider sharing this episode with family or friends who might have an interest in economics at Middlebury. And if you have a moment, please leave a review. Finally, if you have any questions, feel free to email me at egong@middlebury.edu. Subject line, Mid-Econ Podcast. Until next time, please stay curious about the world and kind to others around you.